Members of Dunfermline Abbey may not be aware that one of the principal aims of the Airborne Alliance in Scotland is to encourage fellowship between those who have worn the famous red beret of the parachute regiment. Knowing that some members of this congregation will recognise a certain irony, therefore, in me being invited to preach at this annual muster service. Because the only real military connection that I can boast is through our son, who wears a green beret. Which, of course, belongs to that other illustrious regiment, the Royal Marines. However, I may have been asked to preach today because through our son's involvement with the Green Berets and looking wider than regimental interests, I know what it means to be shaped by the values of a regimental corps. I know what it means to be loyal to those who have worn the same cap badge. Sometimes I wish that in the church, and certainly in the Church of Scotland, we had the same sense of common identity and knew the same kind of loyalty to one another and to cause that I have found in the regiments. Maybe today I have been asked to preach because I know what it means to be deployed in dangerous places, what it is to see young life cut down in its prime, and what it is to suffer injury, physical, mental, and emotional, which turns young life too quickly into what is known as a veteran. I know too that the Airborne Alliance puts a great deal of effort into raising money for military charities, not just the Airborne Forces Security Fund, but also for other Scottish military charities and for Veterans Scotland, which, at the time of our son's need to begin his rehabilitation back into independent living, was the charity that gave him the restart in life that he really needed at the right time. But for all the reasons that I may have been asked to preach today, there are reasons why I have actually taken up the invitation. And in good Presbyterian style, I'll give you three reasons. The first is embodied in the reading we heard from the Revelation of John. It's one of those futuristic, almost fantastical visions of a day when all things will be made new, of a time and place where there will be no more death, neither shall there be mourning, nor crying, nor pain any more, for the former things will have passed away. Let me paraphrase that verse and reframe it in a form which is much less ethereal and much more of an idea that might make you think for a moment. That a day will come when there will no longer be any need for red berets or green berets. When we can finally turn our swords into plowshares and our spears into pruning hooks. When there will be no more death, nor mourning, nor crying, nor pain, nor need for poppies, no more need for battlefields and conflict zones on Mother Earth. When I was a moderator a couple of years ago, I invited people all over the country to make paper doves and pray for peace. One man sent me this dove. And he told me that he had formed it from the body panel of an ex-War Department Jeep. I believe that a day will come, as St. John suggests. It won't be tomorrow. There is much evidence that the world today is still a dangerous and divided place, perhaps as dangerous and divided as it has ever been. And as long as there is such danger as we see in our daily newsreels, we will need brave women and men to stand between us and the frontiers of terror. But the reason that faith has not run its course and is still vital in an age of growing atheism is that it is faith that drives us to believe that an age of real peace will yet come to pass. The second reason for accepting this invitation is to remind us that there is only one power that can bring that day of peace into being. And it is the power spoken of in the lesson from the Gospel today. It is the power of the commandment to love. The second of our readings takes us into the very heart of Jesus' teaching. Indeed, it is perhaps the most important verse in the whole of the Bible. A new commandment I give to you, that you love one another even as I have loved you. Those of you who belong to regimental life actually know what this means in real terms. It is the distance you will go for the man or woman who is fighting by your side. It is the depth of loyalty that we have for the cap badge, and it is the distance we will travel in the defence of truth and right and freedom. And it can be very costly. The price paid can break hearts. And it is because the currency is love. And I am reminding you today of Jesus' word that the future belongs not in conflict but in deep love for one another. But I can't say that without also reminding you that Jesus always went further in his teaching than anyone else ever had. And in another place, he reminds us that the toughest thing of all to learn is how to love our enemy. I don't want you to think that I regard that as an easy option or an easy thing to do. But I know this much. Enemies never become friends unless they are prepared to find ways to speak to one another while they are still enemies. And too many people have been the victims of too many conflicts for us not to want to make such conflicts a thing of the past. So we have to find a new way. In the story of our human development until now, you know, the evolution of alternative dispute resolution is something that we have only just come to very recently. Although you may not think it, the tools of negotiation, of mediation, and conciliation are only in the infancy of development compared to the length of time that we have been using force to settle our disputes. But the truth is this, we cannot continue to live on planet Earth by the old rules of conflict. And a default position of an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth will only bring us to the day when no one can chew and no one can see. It is, however, the work of God to move us out of that old default position. And it is the example of Christ which demonstrates that love is a weakness that ultimately triumphs over might. More often than not, the very places where I have been in the presence of God is where enmity has been set aside, past faults forgiven, and the estranged become reconciled. And when that happens, something intangible happens. You feel as if you're in the presence of God. The antithesis is when people decide to make their disputes and their complaints the work of their whole life. And the net result is paralysis. Life becomes the conflict. They become possessed by the dispute. It determines the direction of their lives and it scars their character. And when we meet that kind of behaviour, the pervading sense is the absence of the presence of God. The gospel lesson today reminds us that we need to make love the prerogative. And then slowly, by inches and by degrees, we may begin to see John's vision of peace become a reality. There is, however, a third and final point today. I can never content myself with ideas of pie in the sky when you die. And a vision of utopia is not enough to bring it about. So it seems to me that the really urgent task of our time and of generations to come is bringing about the economic and cultural shift which moves us from our investment in war and its hardware into an investment in peace and its dividend. And the truth of the matter is this, that while it takes courage to face the enemy in the line of battle, and while it takes passion to turn a person into a warrior, it takes just as much courage to face our enemy across the negotiating table, and just as much passion to turn a person into a peace builder. Here are two disturbing facts for you to think about on your way home today. Annually, military spending around the globe amounts to 2.5% of the world's gross domestic product. Now, let me put that into real terms. That is the equivalent of approximately $249 a year for every man, woman, and child on the planet. At the same time, the United Nations, through all of its development agencies and funds, spends $30 billion each year, which is the equivalent of about $4 for each of the world's inhabitants. You do the sums, and you see what kind of shift in priorities is needed to change the world from where it is today to where it can be. And one other disturbing thought to take home. In South Sudan today, it is easier for a 10-year-old boy to acquire a Kalashnikov machine gun and become a boy soldier than it is for him to acquire a school bag and the books to go with it. So for me, days like this are not just about sacred remembrance and thanksgiving for the sacrifice of so many, but they are also about learning from real experience how to break the unending cycles that maintain hostility and that breed the conditions in which such conflict prevails. And one practical way of doing that, of responding to the commandment to love one another and to work for the utopia described by St. John is to work tirelessly, politically, and passionately to make sure that that young boy in South Sudan has a school book instead of a gun. Amen.